Hello and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. It's a podcast about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this podcast is about Season 8, Episode 10, In the Still of the Night. And I really recommend you watch the episode of NYPD Blue before listening to this podcast, because we actually had to record it under some time constraints, so we don't really get into a lot of context. We kind of just get into it almost from the word go. And you can watch NYPD Blue on Hulu, a premium streaming service. It does have syndication edits. It's upscaled, but you might have a shorter episode than how they originally aired. And then it's also on Tubi, and I don't know if they have the syndication edits, but they do have commercials. If you can deal with that, it is absolutely free. Anyway, moving forward, just saying, not a lot of context for the episode, so it's a good idea to watch Season 8, Episode 10, In the Still of the Night before listening to this podcast. But hey, you can do what you want. Have a good one. Peace.
This episode only needs 5 minutes.
Go.
Szymanski and his racist brothers, cousins, and sister fuckers, whatever they are, get mad at a guy who accidentally killed one of their family members because they were drunk and stepped out in front of a car. So they're being all, hey, we're a bunch of bitches. Can you, like, be cool even though my cousins are still trying to fight this guy and we're racist? Can you still be cool and let him go? Their brother just died. Come back the next day. Those two guys got into a fight at a bar with another guy that's their friend. He's dead. Got to go find them. Blobbity blue. They're racist and stupid. And they should go to jail because they're dum-dums. Second thing, Lieutenant Bass, say goodbye. He's retiring. His wife is a weirdo who stabbed herself, claimed that someone stabbed her, a black kid, kind of racist. And then come to find out, she stabbed herself and set something on fire in the past because her husband doesn't love her enough.
Pay attention to her.
Same thing. Moving on. Sipowicz dips his dick in, what's her name?
Cynthia.
What's Cynthia's and Uncle Eddie's
niece?
Dipping the pen in that ink. Yeah, I'm done. And then Medavoy hooks up the tall one and the other tall one, and they go to a doo-wop night.
Welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is where
Four minutes. Thank you. You're welcome.
This is the show where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever. This is Season 8, Episode 10, In the Still of the Night. So while that was succinct, it was also a little wrong.
Name five things I got wrong.
You didn't get the familial relations of everybody involved right.
That's not wrong.
Well, the thing you touched on is Szymanski's family is just racist. Szymanski's cousin was involved in an altercation with a man because that man hit Szymanski's cousin's brother when they were drunk on the streets of New York.
So if it's Szymanski's cousin's brother, doesn't that make it
Szymanski's other cousin?
Yeah. So why are you making it convoluted, bitch?
I have no idea. But the point being that because their family member's with a cop, Szymanski's already down there going like, why do we need to put cuffs on him? Why? Come on, guys, it's my cousin. Just fucking stop being cops to them. Then they attack the dude again in the lobby of the precinct when they bring in the guy.
And it's Danny's first full day back.
He was suspended after beating a suspect. And then
that's weird. He just got suspended for what most cops call Thursday.
And he came back, and there's a fight that breaks out, and Sipowicz has to hold him back and go, you're not going to get involved.
He doesn't really hold him back. He just kind of, like, before as it starts, he just says, stay away, basically.
And when they get separated, Sorensen's like, I can't take care of myself. And then Sipowicz is like, you shouldn't touch people for the next couple of days. Seems like something you'd pick up pretty quickly, that you were...
You shouldn't touch people, period, but okay.
They bring in Szymanski's family and this guy. They convince the guy that was attacked by Szymanski's family, they convince him, hey, if they pay for your car and your medical bills, will you not press charges? And the guy even calls him out going like, so you just don't want me to press charges? Yeah, that's why you're talking to me like this.
Yeah, it's some cop shit.
And then he realizes, like, okay, whatever, let's just get over this situation.
Do you think he said that because, do you think he just got over it because he knew it wasn't going to go anywhere?
Yeah.
Because it was six white guys versus him?
Yeah, 100%. I think that guy does a great job, that actor, kind of expressing the idea like, hey, I have a right to be extremely upset about what happened here. I didn't do anything wrong. I also went through a traumatic experience. A dude jumped in front of my fucking car, and then I got beat up by people. But now I'm being...
get over it, though.
But I'm basically being like, hey, could you be cool to them? Because
you didn't mean to run over them. So, I mean, get over it, number one.
And he has that moment where he just realizes this is a waste of time.
Would he be this torn up if he ran over a dog that ran into the middle of the street without him being able to stop? Maybe. Would you?
I'd be torn. I get torn up.
I can tell you this. I wouldn't. I've run over both, and I'm not it. I have the same exact feeling on both.
That's
not just
true.
A thump, and we keep going.
It's not true.
You'll never know.
Anyways, something I wanted to get to, because we kind of shotgun through those scenes. There's a scene where Szymanski's father is there with Szymanski.
Okay, so that's Szymanski's dad.
Szymanski's dad with the cousin's girlfriend, Misty.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Misty.
And
when's the last time you have you ever met a Misty?
I've only seen a Misty in Pokemon. And honestly, Misty, and I don't mean anything by this. Misty is not a name I feel like someone is given at birth. It's like a nickname or something. Like, I don't think there's actual Misty, people that are named Misty from the parents.
I bet you Misty is more common than you think.
At that meeting with Szymanski's dad and Misty.
Yeah.
They bring out the dudes. Uh-huh. And Sipowicz says, hey, if you see this guy on the street, don't attack him. It's done. You're going to have to take care of his car and his medical bills, but this is taken care of. He's not going to press charges. Then Szymanski's dad says, will he take an apology? And the dude lights up like, what the hell? Why do I have to apologize to him? Then we go see the guy, and they have an apology, handshake, and everybody leaves. What we know about this family, now that we've watched the whole episode, would that dad have said that if he knew the dude was black?
Yeah, because I think the dad is more... Yeah, because the dad is racist, yes, but the dad's also like, hey, if they're getting you off, if the cops, because I'm a cop, if they're working to get you off, then you're going to do the one thing that they're going to ask you for. And if all they're asking you for is an apology...
But they didn't even ask for the apology. They said, it's all good. He's going to not press charges. You just have to pay for it. Then the father is the one that's like, will he take an apology? He's the one...
Oh, no. I think it didn't matter who it was. I think it's because how they were acting, he knew they were wrong.
Okay. Because...
Yeah.
When I watched this episode the second time, I was like, the way that these guys are inherently racist was because that dad has to be racist because Szymanski's a little bit racist, and those guys, when we find out from the second half of the story, which is that same guy kills a guy by fighting him in the street. And a witness says that he was at a bar screaming, I'm going to take care of the N-word that killed my brother. So he has to be, he's racist. He's a racist.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm the dad. So just because the dad has manners doesn't exclude him from being racist. Do you get what I'm saying?
But
I still think so. I still, like, there are plenty of people that you and I both know that would be super pleasant and kind and, like, courteous and have manners towards people to their face and then say some of the most racist shit, like, comfortably when that person walked away and not even think of anything different of it. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They would be like that man and be like, yeah, you will go apologize and then turn around and say the N-word and not think anything different because those things are, they're not the same to them. Like,
yeah.
their hate for that person and manners are different and they can exclude it. It's weird. But yeah, I think he still would have made him apologize because they were acting like assholes.
Well, yeah, it was.
And they were kind of, I feel like, embarrassing him, and he's. It's that whole cop thing. Yeah. It's that whole cop thing of like, hey, they're trying to work to get you guys safe and out of here, and you guys are acting like this. Like, mm-hmm. not only are you going to do this, you're going to go apologize. It doesn't matter who it is.
Because, yeah, that was my big highlight, not my highlighted, underlined question was like, because the family.
You're just always thinking about race, though. That's your problem.
Well,
let it go, dude.
The point was this
you're like
episode.
You're like a liberal. You're a California liberal. What happened to you?
I never left.
Always thinking about race, dude. always on the forefront of your mind.
Well, no, the thing that happened, like I watched this episode and Szymanski made me very angry for a very specific reason, which we'll get to. But then watching it the second time,
I know why you're mad.
When the dad is like, will he take an apology? And then the guy shakes his hand. I was like, I wonder if the dad immediately regrets saying you give him apology once he saw that the guy was black. Because I have a feeling everybody in that family is fucking racist. So this whole story leads to him actually committing a murder of this other guy.
The next night.
And the dude left the scene, Szymanski's cousin. Szymanski is in the lobby and says, like, hey, I got to talk to you. And they're like, yeah, obviously. Where's your fucking cousin? And he's like, oh, well, I have him in a hotel. I need him to sober up. And it's like.
Well, they come to the scene and the bartender's not helping. So then they have to go and talk. And then, yeah, Szymanski's like, he's never helping himself. Because it seems like he's always trying to be a step ahead of them instead of just helping them out and having them figure it out.
And what's really annoying about Szymanski is Szymanski's like, look, man, look, okay, so, and this is important because this is something I didn't realize until the second watch. Szymanski says, look, I didn't go with him to O'Leary's. I was with him at the town lounge before they went to O'Leary's. So he knows how drunk and how belligerent the guy was.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we finally get the witness who comes in and Szymanski's like, well, what did you see? What did you see? What's going on? What do you have? And John.
Yeah, he's a very strong army.
And John basically grabs her and takes her to the coffee room. He knows that at the town lounge, the guy was out of control. So whatever happened at O'Leary's that he didn't see, he already knows how bad it was before he got there. He's just trying to protect him and his cousin's ass. So when that witness tells them, oh, yeah, he was shouting and saying the N-word that killed my brother, mm-hmm. that includes knowledge that Szymanski would be aware of. He was there at the town lounge when he was doing
there when it. He knows that, how bad they were.
So when they find out from this witness that he said out loud in front of people, if I ever see that Billy, I'm going to kill him. Because Billy had the audacity, Kyle, the audacity to go up to a man who was screaming, if I see that N-word, or if that damn N-word that killed my brother, and said, hey, could you keep it down out of respect to people in the bar? Because that guy did that, he deserved to die.
Oh, yeah.
And Szymanski knows that he said it.
I'm getting a lot of, like, you not proud of being, you're white or something right now.
Szymanski knows that he said it. Then they come back out and they go, hey, get your fucking cousin a lawyer. Go get him a lawyer. And he goes, well, you're selling me ice in the winter, guys. I brought him in here and he gave you a statement before we found out. It's like, hey, Szymanski, fuck you. Fuck your cousin. Fuck your dead cousin. Fuck your dad. Fuck your family. Because you're a bunch of racist pieces of shit. You knew.
That went on for a long time.
Like,
that was a lot of fucks.
Like, you knew.
That was a lot of fucks.
You knew your cousin did all this shit. And you hid him from us because he was too drunk. And you were trying to figure out a way to get past this. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're the worst. That's what made me so angry is this entitlement of like, but I'm a cop, so help me. And they even said in the guy's fucking first interview, hey, helping you was yesterday. Get the charges off of you. because you were mourning your brother. Today, you're just a fucking murderer.
No, he was mourning his brother last night, too.
But it was like, fuck that guy.
Oh, well, you can only mourn for a day?
My mourning never involved killing a dude because I was racist.
My Mourning Jacket is a pretty good band. I don't know what you're angry about. Like, I don't know what you're angry about.
The entitlement.
Yeah, but, like, then be upset with all of the cops every day when they wake up and go to work.
Yeah. Well, there's also more entitlement, which is the second story.
Yeah, that's the grosser entitlement.
You think that's the grosser entitlement?
Yeah. That's what it's on. If not, it's the same thing. It's just as gross. They don't do their jobs because they're afraid that of telling Captain Bass that your wife is a psycho.
Okay, but I think
if it was a skinny drug infested black woman who was that was going through, they would have brought her in and screamed at her until she broke down and cried. But because it was Captain Bass's, it was just like, hey, everyone, shut up. Russell tries to bring it up three times, like, shut up, don't talk about it. You're right, but don't talk about it is basically what they say.
So
they wasted a bunch of time and effort, and they could have just walked in and said, hey, you're crazy? Like, chill the fuck out.
I think we're both upset at very different levels of entitlement. Because you're not wrong, but nobody died in her story.
Luckily,
a dude.
One of the times she said she set a fire. We're lucky no one died on that one. This time she decided to just stab herself. Okay, that's crazy. That's crazy.
So I have the feeling this episode is not going to fare well if you haven't watched the episode. So definitely watch the episode because we're just all over the joint. But I will say this: what happens with the Shemansky family is, hey. My cousins are drunken assholes, but they're my family, and I'm a cop, and my dad's a cop, so help them. And they say, okay, because the only harm that has occurred is this guy who accidentally killed your cousin because your cousin ran out in front of his fucking car. His car is damaged, and he was beaten up, but he's willing to let that go because he knows he has no leg to stand on against a cop family. Mm-hmm. So you've basically fucked that guy over and said, fucking deal with it. Mm-hmm. You then take that W, and you go out to a bar and remain pieces of shit, and you kill a person. You murder a person. And then you walk in here, and you go, well, where's my help? Fuck your help. You got your help yesterday that you didn't deserve. Now you're going to get what you do deserve, which is a murder charge because you murdered a dude. And you did it with intent according to a person you were screaming at earlier in the fucking night.
Yeah, but this bitch did the same thing. She just did it like 6 years apart.
Yeah. She's also wrong. I'm not saying that she's not wrong.
She just did it 6 years apart. That's all. However many years.
The Captain Bass story is his wife got stabbed by someone, in quotes, at her job.
Oh, no, she's pretty adamant about who stabbed her.
When they talked to her, she says it was a black gentleman who was robbing and then stabbed her. Mm-hmm. She also mentioned that he ran away with goblets. I haven't robbed anyone or hurt anybody with a knife.
That's about right. Pimp goblets. I get it.
But the idea of this dude slashing her and then being like, I gotta pick me up some goblets.
Well, I mean, as one does. As one tends to do when they're slashing white women at an antique store.
But, yeah, that whole story is Medavoy and Jones and Russell are running down leads, trying to talk to guys that were on the videotapes, and it all comes out to nowhere. Because she ended up slashing herself, and she's doing it just for Captain Bass's attention, which I think was highlighted and also hinted at, because when this happens, Captain Bass spends more time in Fancy's office than he does next to his wife.
Yeah, he doesn't even, like, go and talk to her.
He just goes to Fancy's office asking for updates about the guy who slashed his wife instead of just being with his wife.
Yeah, and it seems like she's at the hospital alone a lot.
And I told you jokingly when watching it, but it's like it's almost like Captain Best doesn't really want to hang out with his wife. And was like,
the conversations you saw her had, would you?
She is very short and rude to Russell.
I'm not talking about her physical stature, Kirk. I'm talking about...
God, you're hilarious.
Get it?
I do get it.
She does look pretty short, though. Captain Bass looks like a little Oompa Loompa himself, so...
Yeah, Captain Bass, we also said... I think Captain Bass might be on the spectrum. He does seem to have, like, a very weird monotone to everything, even when he's, like, supposed to be really overcome with emotion. He still keeps, like, the same volume and the same tone about everything.
Yeah, he does have a weird cadence in his voice, and, like...
It never changes.
Yeah.
Never changes, no matter what they're talking about.
Until this episode when he's talking to... Fancy, and he gets a little whispery. What are you doing to me, Arthur?
What are you doing?
What are you doing to me, Arthur? Sounds like Voldemort.
Harry. But he does say that he thinks about putting in his papers. Sounds like Voldemort.
Fancy. Lieutenant Fancy.
I do want to, because we do have a kind of a time constraints on this episode, but I do want to mention some scenes that I think were important. Number one,
mother has a time constraint.
The
we're not done. We still have more to talk about.
The gay dude hitting on John.
Talking about lead soldiers. A ten hut.
So this guy comes in who's the guy who runs the antique mart, and John recognizes him from like an antiques roadshow thing, but for toys.
Yeah, you know how John recognizes him? Gay. Because like that was just to let you know, like, hey, this guy does something super gay. That's how John knows who he is.
Because
the only time the other time that something like that happens is when that dude's like breeding puppies and shit.
Anyway,
when that bitch brings in that looking for those dresses, and she's like, oh, I own this little antique mart, and he's like, oh my god, you have like the nicest things, blah blah blah. Anytime they just want to let you know, like, hey, something that's super gay in the world, John knows who it is.
It's pretty fucked up, because now, looking back, that's true of almost every single person that John recognizes.
Yeah.
It's very early 2000s writing. But this dude comes in who runs the antique mart.
Who?
The guy who runs the...
Runs the world. What? Who runs the world, girls? Oh, sorry. I was just singing some Beyonce.
That was last year's Super Bowl halftime show.
No.
Wasn't it?
No, I think she was a while ago.
That was last year's was Rihanna.
Yeah.
Racist.
Nice one. Nice try to be. Look at Kirk trying to be in the now. I know pop culture.
John meets with this guy.
Yeah.
And this
His
guy.
His name was, I think, Jeff.
And did you say Jeff? Did you say Jif?
Jib.
What the fuck are you talking about? This guy comes in to give the color-coded tapes. The guy comes in to give the tapes.
That dude's not gay. You know why?
You said this, and I still don't really believe you.
Sideburns.
The sideburns are wrong.
No respectable gay man in any era from now until, or from Deadwood until now. Deadwood times until now would have sideburns like that.
I love how they try to have him tell jokes to Medavoy and Jones, and Medavoy and Jones just don't get him.
Yeah, they're too straight. They're too manly.
But it was stuff like, Mrs. Bass sells 19th century Eastern European this. Most thieves aren't aware that there isn't a market, and they're... And then Medavoy's like, I just mean you can't pawn the shit she sells.
What about goblets?
And then he's like...
You have a wide variety of goblets on your inventory?
And then another one where that was like, what the fuck, was when he's like, here's a list of our known shoplifters that we make sign a paper. He's like, you know, besides other antique dealers. And both Medavoy and Baldwin were like, just give us the list. Like, spare us the jokes. We don't have time for your shit.
Oh, sorry, they're making your job 10 times better.
So they when they get the shit from him, Sipowicz gives John money.
Yeah, finally. Finally.
And
treating him like a child labor.
And confirming that he's watching Theo tonight. Sipowicz confirms that John is watching Theo.
Yeah, right before sexy new dude comes in.
And then new dude comes up to John and says, "Hey, you want to get a cocktail tonight? You can show me that lead soldier."
A tan, huh?
Because John mentioned that he has some antique toys that he would like to appraise with the guy.
He wants to put it through his boot camp, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and the guy wants to appraise John's dick in his mouth. So
boot camp means his butthole. Wants to put a soldier through boot camp, if you know what I'm saying. With the drill sergeant.
You have never looked more like a 12-year-old than when your head popped up and said, "Boot camp's his butthole." I wish I had a camera.
He wants to put him through boot camp.
I wanted to mention that they start bringing in dudes that are on the security tapes, and they bring in a dude, Jesse, who's the first guy they bring in, who admits to, like, robbing people's wallets.
I wonder if he's okay. And, you know, his friend really wants his girl.
What? Jesse.
Oh, to watch your face figure it out?
You fucking asshole.
Even better, dude. Just hope he's doing okay. Rick Springfield's really coming after him.
Ugh, fucking fuck you, gal. So I just wanted to mention that I thought that actor did such a good job as that guy.
No, he did.
He did.
He was really good because he doesn't know why he's in there. He does a really good job of, like, when they, like, start getting on him, being like, "Whoa!" Like, he does a great job.
He also he's clearly doing a, "Look, I'm not admitting that I did anything." And then they're like, "Well, okay, well, we can write our own story."
We were not on the same page.
What?
I was like, clearly he's doing a Dave Chappelle impression. And you went a different way.
No, he's not doing a Dave Chappelle impression. No, he starts the conversation saying, like, "Oh, I didn't do shit. I don't know what you're talking about." And then they're like, "Oh, well, we have our own story that you robbed and stabbed a woman and slashed her." And he's like, "Look, I stole one woman's wallet. I can tell you exactly where it is. I did not stab anybody." And they're like, "Oh, you want to stand in a lineup?" He's like, "Yeah, I didn't do shit." And then that made me think, how fucked up would it have been if they did bring in Captain Bass and she pointed him out? If it went that far.
Just out of, like, coincidence, she just, like, guessed three and he was number three or something?
Yeah.
Damn, that's diabolical. This bitch is just putting people in prison for no reason.
Well, that didn't even happen.
But we're just thinking, like, she's just going to go in there and put people in prison for no reason. Just to get her, like, shitty husband to look at her.
So, I wanted to mention his name. His name was Garland Spencer.
Garland.
But also something crazy about Garland Spencer. When I looked up his IMDb, he was in a movie. You Got Served.
You got F'd in the A?
Exactly. You Got Served. And that's just a crazy thing. I was like, "Oh, shit."
Was he, like, a main character in You Got Served?
It just said B-boy, so I'm like, "So he was one of the dancers in You Got Served."
Oh, then he was like, "Yeah, that's unfortunate." But good for him. Everybody's got to start somewhere.
Medavoy and Jones look up another guy that used to be a security guard. I thought he did a fairly good job, but he basically was accused of stealing a jade statue, and when they bring him in, he assaults, in quotes, Medavoy by pushing him.
Well, Medavoy's a bitch. Anyone can push Medavoy.
And
is it assault if, like, Medavoy can't defend himself? Like, he's supposed to be a cop. Like, what's going on?
When they bring him in, I really like his performance because he's like, "Look, here's the deal, man. The dude railroaded me, and he says he's going to get the police on my ass. I never did anything wrong." And then all of a sudden, the cops show up, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to prison for no reason," and I freaked out. But the thing that I like about him a lot is he says, like, "Look at the facts. I was a security guard for 2 years. Why would I steal a statue just all of a sudden?"
Yeah, especially one.
And then, two, they're like, oh, so you stabbed and robbed a lady. He's like, so I protected the people at this place for 2 years and then decided to start hurting them? Like, does that make any sense? And everything kind of checks out. And he is the guy that they let loose after they've determined that Captain Bass's wife did do it to herself. And they don't charge him for the assaulting an officer, which they still could have if they really wanted.
Yeah, but they
shouldn't
have. Not after they figured out that she's the lunatic. Because he would have never been brought in if it wasn't for her.
And we, I do want to talk about one scene that you said. It seemed like Russell went 0 to 100 on Captain Bass's wife.
Yeah, she just starts yelling at her all like out of nowhere. Like, I get it, she's crazy, but she went from like, "Can I ask you a question?" to "I know you did." It was like,
well,
whoa! Like,
I because when you said it, I think Russell was only reflecting what she was getting from Captain Bass's wife, because she walks in and says, "Hey, can I talk to you?" Mm-hmm. And she said, "I already told you what happened." And she's like, "Okay, well, you said you were attacked with a gold, like a gold-handled flaying knife." And she goes, "Do you own that knife? A knife that looks like that?" And she goes, "No, my knives have black handles."
What's
and it was like,
"What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that?"
She's answering a question.
No, she's not just answering a question. She's being a bitch. So then Russell goes, "Hey, you bought one. I have proof." And then she goes, "Well, what is this?
Exactly. What is this? Why not lead with that? What are you doing with your sneaky little games over here?
To see if you're lying, which you clearly are." That was the whole point. And then she goes hard when she realizes, oh, she's just going to get defensive and not tell me the truth. And then going hard gets the results of her admitting that she stabbed herself because her husband doesn't look at her.
Yeah, but it was just, I just felt like there was a better way to go about it. It gets the results, yes. But is it the most humane, like, proper way to go about it? Probably not.
I think that woman, like you, because you said it's fucked up that she uses the privilege of being a cop's wife to never get in trouble for doing this shit. I think she was also using that to be like, what is this fucking detective talking to me about? Don't you know who my husband is? And it's like, bitch,
no one cares.
Did you fuck up? And
no one cares. You know what I mean?
No one cares about what?
Who her husband is.
Yeah, I don't.
No one cares. Like, yeah, that's the thing that just annoys me the most is you wasted, like, 2 whole days with this shit, and Russell brought this to you right out the gate. That's the annoying part.
You're talking about Fancy. All
of them. Like, it's not just Fancy's fault. It's because of what is perpetuated from the top down. It's not just Fancy. Fancy's doing what he's been, like, taught and felt. It's the whole thing. They're all fucked. They're all wrong. He should have been able to just go to Captain Bass and been like, "Hey, I think your wife," delicately, been like, "Hey, I think your wife is fucked up. Here's why. Like, we just started this, but she did this shit."
You know, when you delicately tell somebody that their spouse is fucked up?
Like, nothing's making sense. Like, nothing matches up. It's all of them. They're all messed up because they're all, it's just a systematic thing that they're all still protecting each other with, so.
Because, yeah, it's important to note that Russell early was like, I think, There was always kind of a hesitation that maybe she started a fire herself, and then Fancy's like, "Don't even go there, don't even do it." And then when she finds out evidence, Fancy's like, "Are you sure you want to do this?" And that's when Russell says, "If this wasn't the captain's wife, would we even have this conversation?" The answer is no.
No. If this was a black woman they pulled off the street, who was like cracked out, a crackhead black woman who cut her arm. And then they would immediately have, like, if they had the same history as her, they would immediately have been like, "She did it." Like, they would have totally been like, "The evidence doesn't match. She's crazy. This doesn't make sense, blah, blah, blah." And they would have been on her like that. That's all I'm saying.
And Fancy does bring, also, I said, they did say his first name, and did you catch it? And the Captain Bass's first name is Clifford. Because she says, "Oh, Clifford," when they meet in the beginning.
Oh,
of the
that's right, yeah.
Clifford, from the very beginning, is like, "I want a full court press on this, Arthur. I'm going to authorize any overtime. Stay through the night if you have to." And my first thought is, Are the taxpayers getting that money back from overtime because your wife be crazy?
Well, no, they did overtime. They had to pay it.
So, like, what the fuck is this about?
You can't retroactively go back and tell someone that they're not getting paid for work they did.
But Fancy and Bass have that conversation where Fancy says, like, I think your wife needs help. I think you need to go talk to her. And lots Captain Bass kind of gives them the thank you for not using this as leverage against me, which is something like Haverhill would have done, mm-hmm. something that assholes in the past.
I mentioned it to you. I thought it was kind of messed up that, like,
the first thought Bass has.
As Fancy's telling him all this information, the first thought Bass has is, how are you going to use this against me? And Fancy's like, I'm not. Like,
yeah, he says, what are you doing to me, Arthur? And it's
all Bass is thinking about is like, oh shit, Fancy knows all this fucked up stuff. How am I gonna get screwed? And he's like, I'm not trying to screw you, I'm letting you know, like, you need to figure this out. And it's just sad that he can't. That's the first thing he worries about.
Very political motivation.
But that's what you know, working at a police station does, I guess, because everyone's trying to, like, move to the top.
Yep. Two side stories that are real quick. Number one, Medavoy basically nudges ADA Haywood and Baldwin onto a date, and I thought it was frustrating. Kyle thought it was a good idea. I don't know why. I don't know
if it was a good idea. I just thought it was kind of funny the way he did it, how he just kind of dropped it on him and left the room.
I got these doo-wop tickets, peace.
Yeah, it was really funny, but
the only thing I enjoyed about it is how Baldwin's like, so how long have you been working that up? And he's like, I just thought you guys needed a nudge. So you got a date? And then Baldwin goes, I don't think that's any of your fucking business if I got a date or not. The other side story, because the end of the episode is they're at the doo-wop and it just is them talking about music. Yeah. But the other side story that is very interesting is Sipowicz and Cynthia consummated their fuck buddiness because...
Dating? I'll say they're dating.
Sipowicz always says we've had some dinners. He never says it's his girlfriend. He never says they're dating.
Sipowicz is an idiot.
But Cynthia and...
You can't be fuck buddies until you fuck. So they're just now fuck buddies then.
Yeah, they're fuck buddies.
So they went on a few dates, which
then
makes
they became
them
fuck
dating.
Buddies. Point is this, Kyle. I really like the scene. I told you it reminded me of watching Love on the Spectrum, which is not meant to be insulting, but it just seems like how they were speaking to each other was very awkward. Sipowicz is wearing a very odd sweater, and I think he's trying to be flirtatious Sipowicz, which is very funny. And then
yeah, he's wearing a sweater t-shirt combo that I feel like we've never seen him wear before.
And Cynthia basically gives him this speech like, I've decided, because I didn't waste a lot of time. I spent a lot of time with my mother. She got sick with MS, and I decided I'm not waiting anymore. If I want something, I'm going to go get it.
Sounds like she's blaming her mom for not getting any wiener. Right?
I don't think she's blaming her mom.
Oh, if my mom wouldn't have gotten MS, I would have gotten more penis, and I would have probably seen more of the world. But, oh, man.
You know what? My life needed less MS, more penis,
yeah,
if you know what I'm saying.
Less MS, more penis. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think she blamed her mom. I think she just said, like, that's what happened.
Well, she was blaming her mom.
I missed out on a lot of time, so now I'm going to go for it. And by go for it, she's going to bang that hedgehog.
she got to pop those golden rings.
But it is interesting that...
Bing, bing, bing!
So... this leads to a question I had, which is awkward as hell. So, she bangs Sipowicz.
She bangs.
And you mentioned it while we were watching it before we started recording, that her first choice is to go after a guy who looks like this. And then we see Eddie Gibson, her uncle. And her uncle now has a mustache. Do we think that Eddie Gibson grew a mustache because Sipowicz has one?
No.
And she's got an interest in Sipowicz, so he's like, oh, maybe I should get a mustache.
No, I think that would be really creepy.
And do you think that she's attracted to Sipowicz because Eddie Gibson are the male archetypes in her life?
Yes.
That's what's happening.
Yeah, I think she's attracted to men that look like that because she's so attached to Eddie. She talks about it all the time. There's always a mention about how close they are, blah, blah, blah. He's like a second father to me. So, yeah.
And that's
I bet your father looks like that guy. It looks like Eddie, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, because that leads after that date is when they meet up with Eddie, who is taking care of the second or the DOA. And when they meet with Eddie, it's pretty clear that Sipowicz is getting really fucking tired of Eddie.
Yeah.
Always bringing up his fucking niece.
Yeah. Which I'm with him on that one.
100%. It's kind of like, hey, we've made the decision to date each other. That doesn't involve you. Why are we talking all the time about it?
Well, they're a close family.
And Eddie even comes up. He's like, hey, if you're just fucking her, you should cut it out now. Which is like, hey, that's none of your fucking business. Stop talking to me, please. But that's some foreshadowing for the future, I think. As well as the end of the episode, which is Haywood and Baldwin are now seeing each other socially.
Doo-wopping it up.
And you mentioned she did say, because he's listening to doo-wop and he knows all the songs, so she's like, I couldn't figure you out. And he's like, what, you thought I was listening to gangster rap? And she's like, I thought you were a Wu-Tang man.
Yeah, that conversation was written by two white men who don't know how to talk to each other.
I think I just couldn't decide if you liked Method Man or Old Dirty Bastard.
They said, and she said it exactly like he did.
And I have a question because while I respect the Wu-Tang, I don't know much about them.
Mm-hmm.
Are there camps and that's how you enjoy Wu-Tang? Is you have a favorite member of Wu-Tang?
Well, I mean, there's like 8 or 9 of them.
And you talk about which one you like.
Yeah,
more.
They all have different styles. Uh-huh. That's why they're the Wu-Tang Clan. They all got different fighting styles.
Oh, it's fighting styles.
Yeah, because they're all into Kung Fu, so it's all different styles. That's why you got your frog style, your rabbit style. It's just like that. You ever see the Five Deadly Venoms, that movie?
No.
Watch that movie. It's 5 different...
Is that a movie about the Wu-Tang
Clan? No. But it's like... It's like a movie about 5 different martial arts styles. Uh-huh. And that's what they kind of model their group off of is how they all are a different style. And it's not really like a camp, but, you know, people, you know, they all started doing solo albums. And it was like, oh, who's better? Who's going to be the better rapper?
Well, we got to wrap it up. I'll ask you if there's anything that you wanted to talk about before mentioning one last thing, and then we'll call it quits. Is there anything you wanted to talk about?
No, not really. This episode is,
well, it's frustrating to me if you couldn't tell.
I feel like this episode is just like a holdover episode to get you ready for 2 other plot lines that are starting. You know what I'm saying?
Kind of.
Like, it was kind of about like, hey, do you remember this racist white guy that you knew? Let's talk about him. And Captain Bass is leaving, so how can we get rid of him?
Also, the Sipowicz-Sylvia thing is still going on, and it might be taking a different direction because now they're butt-banging.
Sipowicz and who?
Cynthia? What did I say?
Sylvia? You said Sylvia.
Oh, similar name. Awkward situation where Cynthia calls Sipowicz, and Sipowicz is talking, and then Theo has to bother him when he's talking on the phone.
This is a cock block, dude.
And then Theo's like, is that the person you've been seeing? He's like, yeah. He's like, can she have dinner with us? And he's like, you know, maybe when he's like, oh, can Katie come too? And he's like, you don't cross the streams, Theo. That's old pussy.
Yeah, you don't let old pussy know about new pussy. I think that's from Deadwood. I think that's literally a line from Deadwood.
But the other thing I wanted to talk about, I don't know if you noticed it, Baldwin doesn't take no for an answer. Does it twice in this episode. Twice.
That's fine.
First one.
Maybe you should learn to take no for an answer. Not to take no for an answer. And you maybe go on a date.
Yeah. I just want to point out, she says, if you're asking me out, the answer is no. And he just says, when do I pick you up? Until she agrees to go.
No.
Then at the date, he gets up to dance and puts out his hand. And she goes, no, I can't do that. And he says, I'm tired of all this faking. And it was like,
he knew.
So I don't know. I'm not saying he's a bad dude.
You're taking
not saying he's a bad dude.
You're taking it as he's being a little bit pushy, and some women are taking it as would take it as he is making the moves because she's afraid, and that's hot. So
what you're saying is I'm saying he's a little bit pushy, and what you're saying is a lot of women would say, "Fuck me, Baldwin Jones."
Yeah,
because look at him.
100%.
Anyway, that's it.
100%.
Thank you for listening to this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. We are on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod. I guess it's now called X. And honestly, we're hardly on there. We're also on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast, mostly just mentioning when new episodes are out. Occasionally, we respond to messages and stuff like that. We're just not very good at the social media. And to be perfectly honest, are we that good at making podcasts? If you just need more NYPD Blue information in your life, there's a couple of good books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by creators and consultants. There was What Would Sipwits Do?, a collection of articles about the show. And then there is Gene Kendall's Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue on Amazon for 99 cents. There's also a couple of stories by Max Allen Collins that take place in the universe of NYPD Blue. Those are cool if you can find them for not way too expensive. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. I would appreciate a rating and review. It's how people see the show in the algorithm. And more importantly, they might check out the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And that's what this is really about, getting more watchers of that show.